Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host in the studio today is Doug Wortham. And we're going to talk today about the State Soldiers Assistance Program and Sexual Assault Awareness Month. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
We refer to the days between the end of summer and the beginning of fall as 101 critical days of summer, and for good reason. The statistics show us that as the seasons change and the temperature rises, the number of injuries to our soldiers and airmen also tick upward. During these 101 days, car accidents, accidental drownings, and alcohol-related injuries are much more common than we would like. A relaxing day out on the lake, a cross-country summer road trip, each one of these scenarios offers an opportunity for injury if we are not careful. As you enjoy your well-earned downtime this summer, I ask you not to forget the importance of safety. A few simple actions on your part prevent bad things from happening. Helmets, seatbelts, and life vests don't work if you don't use them, so please use them. Please be safe and smart as you enjoy everything this warm weather has to offer.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Doug, the Adjutant General, is talking about 101 days in summer and being safe and careful, and I think that's a great message, but even better than that, you've got some guests here today to talk about the 100th anniversary of the State Soldiers Assistance Program.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we will, of course, reinforce the Adjutant General's message about safety, extremely important as we enter summer. But we do want to talk about something over at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. It seems like lately, every time we've had the MDVA on, we've been talking about hiring and the number of vacancies that have been available, which, of course, is still the truth. But today, we want to talk about something special, a program that's offered over at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and that is the State Soldiers Assistance Program. And so joining us in the studio to talk about that are two of our guests, Brad Lindsay and Judy Ogard. See, I did that. I said, don't overthink it. It's Judy Ogard, but I got myself thinking about it, Judy. I made that mistake. But you know what? This is the way it works. Let me tell you what Brad does over at the Department of Veterans Affairs. He has a big amount of stuff on his plate right now. He is the Deputy Commissioner of Programs and Services for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. He's also currently serving as the interim commissioner and the interim role of Deputy Commissioner for Healthcare. So, Brad, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Doug.
All right. And Judy Ogard, so I got it right this time. You're joining us in the studio because you actually worked inside or for this program way back in the day, and you retired in 2013, but you worked the program from 1987 to 1999, so welcome to Minnesota Military Radio as well.
Hi, nice to be here.
All right, so we got a lot to talk about, and the State Soldiers Assistance Program. Brad, I want to just come to you, and maybe you can kind of clear up this misnomer. It says it's the State Soldiers Assistance Program, but we know that there's soldiers, there's airmen, there's Marines, there's merchant mariners, there's Coast Guardsmen, there's Air Force people, airmen.
Navy,
don't forget about them, sailors. Is the program really just for soldiers?
It is not. It is for veterans, Doug. So that's kind of an old term. One of the older terms was just called the Veterans Relief Fund back in the day, but it's been the State Soldiers Assistance Fund in statute for at least since the 40s.
And so we're celebrating 100 years of the State Soldiers Assistance Program, or SSAP, 100 years. And I understand that the program actually has been around longer than the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
That's correct. So the department wasn't created until 1943, but the State Soldiers Assistance Program started under what was then called the Board of Control just after World War I in 1923. The Board of Control eventually became what we now know as the Department of Human Services.
And so the State Soldiers Assistance Program celebrating 100 years. Why is this program in existence? Really, what is it for?
I was taking a look at some of our older documents, and it really hasn't changed over time. This is from our 1944, our very first department annual report. And it says, we're empowered to issue emergency relief to needy veterans and their families, during temporary periods of distress, such as when the veteran is accidentally disabled for a limited time or when he's necessarily hospitalized or medically recommended for a reasonable period of convalescence following hospitalization or illness. So it's really always been in place to be a short-term disability, low-income dental and optical, just kind of a gap filler between long-term disability and an injury or an illness that's preventing someone to work, basically.
Well, now I'm looking at that document that you're holding up there, and that's an old document, and hopefully it doesn't fall apart and deteriorate on you while you're reading out of there. But, you know, you said the program really hasn't changed, but I have to imagine that over 100 years, some things have evolved a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about what kinds of things might have evolved since the program came into inception?
Right. I guess I should have said the intent hasn't really changed.
Ah, there we go, intent.
Yeah. The program itself has changed quite a bit. So I actually started in the State Soldier Assistance Program myself in 1999. It was my first job in the agency, and the programs we have now existed then still in slightly different formats. And, of course, the dollar amounts for assistance and some of our limits and things like that have changed. But we've added to it over the years, certainly. One of the things that was probably the biggest change, if not in the entire history of the program, was what we call now our Veterans Relief Grant. When we created it in 2007, I think it was, we called it our Special Needs Grant. And it's the one thing that we kind of have that is outside of the kind of the emergency disability, low-income type piece. It was just a program created for veterans when they had a one-time catastrophic need that was beyond their ability to take care of on their own. So a good example we always use is, you know, a veteran's going along fine, making it through life, and their furnace goes out in the middle of the winter, and they need $15,000 to fix it, and they just can't take care of that on their own. So it's something we created to help in situations like that. So that's probably the biggest new program we've added, definitely during my time. So.
And, you know, we talk to organizations all the time on this program that provide some type of a resource to those in need, specifically the service members, the veterans. But this is a state-funded program, and a veteran or their dependents or a surviving spouse is eligible to receive some of the monies from the SSAP or State Soldier Assistance Program.
Correct. Yep. Like I said, we have dental and optical programs, benefits that are available for veterans and their family members who fall within our income and asset guidelines, which we've recently increased significantly based on a study we recently completed with the Wilder Foundation. But yeah, that disability piece, when someone is injured and unable to work for a period of time, you know, the same thing. We have allowances in there for their rent, their utilities, for their phone, lots of different pieces just to, like I said, to bridge those gaps and to get them through and to help their children and make sure the veterans themselves don't become destitute until they're back on their feet again on their own.
And like we've also said on this show many times, resources for our veterans, for the most part, will start with their county veteran service officer. And so is that how a veteran or someone in need, their dependent or a surviving spouse, is that how they would get to this program as well?
That is correct. We have county service officers in all of the 87 counties. Several counties have more than one, including their assistants. We also have tribal veteran service officers who work for our department who are out there on the reservations across the state that could assist with this. And if you're at one of our VA hospitals or something like that, we have an office where we have our field operations staff could also assist with it.
No, we didn't get Judy to get a word in here in this segment, but we're going to come back in a little bit here, and we'll make sure we let Judy talk a little bit about her experiences when she was working in the State Soldiers Assistance Program. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host is Doug Wortham, and we're talking to some folks from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, including Brad Lindsay, who is the acting commissioner, and among many other hats that he has, and Judy Ojard. And we're talking about the State Soldiers Assistance Program, and we determined in the first segment that it really applies to all veterans, not just soldiers. But, Brad, I got a kind of a two-part question. Is this, I've heard in the past that the MDVA has a kind of a one-time grant. I'm not sure this is the one. And is there a dollar limit? What can our listeners expect? Is it a few thousand? Is it kind of open-ended?
So there's multiple pieces under the State Soldier Assistance Program. But what I was talking about with like the furnace, the Veterans Relief Grant, that would be a one-time benefit right now. It is one of our suggestions of Wilder study that we did, that we maybe change that and make it more than once per lifetime. But right now, that's what that is. But the other things like dental and optical assistance, those are actually available annually as long as you're qualifying still.
They'd have to prove up in need, of course.
Exactly.
Okay, Doug, I got to get back to you. We got to get to Judy. She's run this program and she knows how it really works.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Judy, I do want to make sure that we get you involved. And you were working the program. Actually, when you started working at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, you started as a Veterans Assistance Coordinator in St. Paul at Central Office, and you were there from 1987 to 1999. And I also understand that you served in the Minnesota National Guard as well.
Yes, that's right. Total of 28 years, including my active duty at the beginning, and I retired in 2004.
And so you went to work for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs as a Veterans Assistance Coordinator. Did you know what kind of impact that would have when you took that job?
I really didn't know very much about the job at all, but it really was an interesting program to work because you were able to do something, just something for everybody that came in, just about.
Yeah, and so you're working with veterans on a day-to-day basis. Now, back in 1987 up until 1999, was there a lot of in-person working as well with the veterans, or was it still pretty much information coming in from a county veteran service officer, and then you kind of did some of the processing?
Well, we had a lot of that, the work that was funneled to us by the county veteran service officers. Most of the assistance applications came in that way, but we also had a cash assistance program that we did where the veterans would come in to us, and also some of the local veterans that were on assistance or whatever would come in. So we did have quite a lot of personal contact.
And I have to imagine that over that 12 years or 13 years of time as a veteran assistance coordinator, that you feel like you've had some pretty significant opportunities to impact in a positive way some of our veterans. Is there anything in particular that kind of stands out to you as an experience that's just kind of memorable or was one of those things where like, hey, this was a big victory because we were to help somebody out?
Well, one thing that we would do is the county veteran service officers would often know these people personally. They came from a smaller community or whatever, and there was that one situation where we had a family that was reduced to living in a tiny little travel trailer, and the county veteran service officer called me and said their lot rent is only like $100 a month or something, and that's not the whole shelter allowance. Is there any way? And she said this little travel trailer is about to be foreclosed on, because they can't make the payments. And so what we basically did is we sort of engineered the shelter allowance and so that we could pay this guy's trailer off. I think he only owed like, $700 or $800 on it, but he simply couldn't pay it. And it was like November, and this entire family was going to be literally be homeless if something wasn't done. And this was the only way that we could do it. And so that's what we did. We you know, did it, paid for the trailer basically under the rent allowance.
And what was that like for you? I mean, or even throughout your entire career, they're not necessarily just this specific example, but going to work every day knowing that you had the opportunity to impact and help others. What kind of fulfillment does that give to you?
Well, I'm sort of a bleeding heart, so I always really liked that. But of course, there was always the problem that you would see more need than you could actually meet. You know, you'd see situations where, well, like I was saying before the interview, that, you know, I saw a couple of situations where widows lost their homes after the veteran died because the shelter allowance that we provided simply wasn't enough. And so, you know, there were always times when I would see that, you know, a lot more was needed, but at least we were doing something.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, right, is we have an ability, the state does, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs has the ability to do something. And I would imagine that if you were, you know, looking today, but now look back to that time frame, the resources that were available then compared to what is available now, it's got to be kind of mind-blowing, I would think.
Well, I'm really happy to see that the income limits and so forth have increased, because they were very, very low before. But, I mean, there always were things that we could do. Like there was that one year when we had a big flood out in western Minnesota, and we were able to come up with some money to give each veteran's family out there I think it was like a $500 grant or something like that, just, you know, just to give them a little boost. It wasn't enough to make up for all that they had lost, but it was just a little something, you know.
Yeah. And so, Brad, I want to come back to you. You know, it's been 100 years, and, you know, to hear the stories that Judy talks about, the way things were, obviously things have changed since she's retired, left the program, and things will continue to change or evolve. What do you see coming for this program in the future?
Well, like I said earlier, Doug, you know, we engage because of the 100-year anniversary. It seemed like a good time to do it. We engage with this study with the Wilder Foundation to talk to veterans, talk to veteran service organizations, stakeholders. We got about 5,000-6,000 responses on our veteran survey about some of the needs out there. So just really taking a comprehensive look at the program going into our next 100 years to see that we're still meeting the needs, or if there are unmet needs, what we can do. Some of that's going to take some further legislation, potentially some more funding. Some of it's as simple as some rule changes, or the first thing we did, as Judy mentioned, we significantly increased our income and asset limits just because we had control over it. And that study found that that was something that was needed. So constantly evolving and making it better and making sure we're taking care of our veterans.
Brad, I want to take you back to the County Veteran Service Officers. It seems like Minnesota is ahead of the rest of the country, and there's a lot of resources available, and the County Veteran Service Officers kind of go to school all the time to learn all of those resources there. For instance, if it's a currently serving service member and they've got some issues, they could go to the Minnesota Military Family Foundation and so forth. But if somebody that's been out, somebody that's been a veteran for some time, It's really important for them to go to that County Veteran Service Officer, because they can pick and choose the resources that are appropriate.
Absolutely, and it may not even be a resource from us. You know, these veteran service organizations, a lot of them have different funding strings that are available to assist veterans and their families. There are local county resources in a lot of cases, or even community resources like things with the Yellow Ribbon that they can connect them to. So that's definitely always the place you want to go, and they're there for you and to serve our veterans.
And so they can figure out which is the most appropriate for the veteran, for their situation. And if they don't really know, they can always talk to you, and you can help them sort it out.
Absolutely.
So we've only got like 30 seconds or so, but we're celebrating 100 years of the State Soldiers Assistance Program, a great program that's available. We know the entry point should go through the County Veteran Service Office. MinnesotaVeteran.org/benefits is a place where people go get information, but also 1-888-LINK-VET is another great resource. So a final message here to our veterans. If you're in need, ask for help. Start at your county veteran service officers, but do not be afraid to ask for help.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You don't know until you've asked. And like Tom said, it takes a little bit sometimes of someone listening to the story and helping navigate the path for you forward.
Well, thank you so much. I wish we had more time, but that's the way it rolls here in the studio. Brad Lindsay and Judy Ojard, thank you so much for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Doug and Tom.
This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. And this segment, we're going to talk about Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs offers support and customer service 7 days a week to Minnesota's veterans and their families. LinkVet is Minnesota's one-stop shop that offers immediate answers with one-on-one assistance for all veteran-related questions and needs. You can also visit MinnesotaVeteran.org to chat with a VetLink representative or to search our large question and answer database. Call 1-888-LINKVET. Almost any veteran issue or question you have can be addressed by the professional LinkVet staff by contacting 1-888-LINKVET.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said at the top of the show, we're going to talk about Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month, and this is in relation to the Minnesota National Guard, which the purpose of the Minnesota National Guard Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Program, SAPR, is to reinforce the commitment of the Department of Defense in eliminating incidents of sexual assault within the military through a comprehensive policy that centers on awareness prevention, training, education, and victim advocacy for not only service members but their families. And joining me today to talk about this topic is Nikki Kelly and Dawn Shoemaker. Ladies, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Nikki, I understand that you are the Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Victim Advocate, long title, for the 133rd Airlift Wing in St. Paul.
That's right. I'm actually go by victim advocate most of the time, just to make it simple.
A lot easier to say, too,
it
victim
is.
Advocate. And I understand you served in the Air Force for some years.
I did. I served 5 years in the active duty Air Force around 9/11.
And you've got a lot of experience in this topic. Can you tell us where you obtained that?
Sure. So I've been a community advocate in the state of Minnesota for over 10 years now, serving all across the state in a variety of roles, working with individuals in medical advocacy, legal advocacy, personal advocacy, and I think I'm forgetting some pieces because advocacy is a very broad field.
Sounds pretty heavy to me.
It is. It's a lot. And I've worked with a lot of different dynamics of groups and demographics.
All right. And our second guest is Dawn Shoemaker, who is the Sexual Assault Response Coordinator, SARC, for the 84th Troop Command Headquarters in the headquarters in Cambridge. And I understand you've got a lot of years of experience as well.
I do, coming up on 14 years in the victim advocacy world.
And what were you, I saw in my notes here that you spent a little time in Alaska. What was that about?
I did. I was the victim witness coordinator for the U.S. Attorney's Office in the District of Alaska. I was stationed in our Anchorage office, but I covered our Fairbanks and our Juneau offices as well. So essentially, any federal crime that we prosecuted, it could be anything from identity theft, embezzlement, all the way up to homicide, human trafficking, and child exploitation.
So you're from North Dakota, went to Alaska, spent some time in Massachusetts, were a correctional officer, and you've been involved in this particular area for a long time.
Yeah, I worked for the active duty Air Force out in Massachusetts in their family advocacy program dealing with domestic violence and child abuse, and then went up to Alaska from there. And now I've been in this position since November.
All right. We got a lot of experience in the studio today. I want to come back to you, Nikki. The general topic of sexual harassment. How would you describe that? How would you define that?
It actually might be easier to define what it isn't. If we start with sexual assault as unwanted contact in what we refer to as a bathing suit area, that would be sexual assault. Sexual harassment would be all of the other unwanted sexual behaviors.
So is some of that verbal? Is some of it physical?
Absolutely. It can be verbal, such as I'll give you this promotion if you do this sexual act. It could be an example of physical, could be a lick on the ear.
So, Dawn, I want to come to you on this one. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around it. When you're having normal conversations, men and men and women, women and women, things happen. We talk about things maybe we shouldn't. Where do you cross the line? How would you draw the line and say, don't do this?
Well, there's that old adage, if you wouldn't say it to your grandma, don't say it at work.
I like it.
Or if you wouldn't say it to your pastor or your priest, don't say it at work. You know, and if you think you've crossed the line, it's okay to pause and say, I think I went too far. I apologize, and walk it back directly. Don't just leave it hanging out there. Because I think a lot of people think once I get to that point, then they just freeze and not sure what to do or what to say. And it's okay to have those conversations. And if you're on the other side of it, you know, it's okay to say, well, hold on, wait a minute. That's not appropriate.
We're talking about sexual assault awareness and prevention today on Minnesota Military Radio. Nikki, I want to come to you. I'm hoping, I'm a Vietnam veteran. I've been around a long time. I'm hopeful that this problem of sexual harassment and sexual assault is better today than it was 50 years ago. Has there been any change? Is it better? Is there less of it? Is there more of it?
Sadly, it's about the same. I'm with you and agree that it needs to end. That's part of why I'm in this profession, is I'd love to put myself out of a job. I'd love to put Dawn out of a job. But statistically, it's stayed pretty stable throughout the decades. We're still seeing the same rates, and it's still a grossly underreported crime.
So, Dawn, this is disappointing to me that this hasn't gotten better and isn't something we're putting in our rearview mirror. People need to know how to behave, and they need to be nicer to each other, and they need mm-hmm. Is this a cultural thing? How do we change it? How do you make this change so that, you know, 10 years from now, we've made some progress?
Oh, that's a good question. So something like Nikki and I were talking prior to this, and one of the things this topic obviously came up is that in our society, we can't even talk about, like, sexual education or healthy sexual relationships, healthy relationships, healthy boundaries. And if we can't have those types of conversations, how do we expect to be able to address sexual harassment and sexual assault?
Now, Nikki, I want to come back to you. I've observed over 13 years that the Adjutant General and the senior leadership at the Guard has kind of a zero tolerance policy for mm-hmm. sexual assault and these things. And, yeah. and yet you're telling me it isn't getting any better. How do you work that way down, or do you have to start at the service level with the soldiers and the airmen and say, this is the way we behave, boys and girls, and where do you start? How do you make this better?
I think it's all of the above, to be honest. I mean, yes, your leadership has to send that message. They're doing a great job of it right now, especially in the Minnesota National Guard. The Adjutant General is very supportive of the program and has communicated very clearly that there is no tolerance for this behavior within the Minnesota National Guard. However, you also have to have that at the base. The E1s through E5s have to feel that message as well and have to believe in that message and exemplify it.
If I could take on real quick, it's not a one solution to a large problem. It's multifaceted. You have to address it at every level, not just one level at a time.
So it's really a cultural issue that we have to want to change, and we have to want to make this better.
Yes.
Nikki, we just got a couple of minutes left. When I think of sexual harassment or sexual assault, I think about men and women. But there are other examples. It's sometimes men on men, women on women, or men and women together.
It is. Males can be victims. Females can perpetrate on females. Males perpetrate on males. I mean, it doesn't discriminate. Can happen to anyone and be perpetrated by anyone.
And Dawn, when these things happen, we hope they wouldn't, but they mm-hmm. do our soldiers and airmen know that you're there, that they should come forward and report these things? Are they still afraid to do it?
They're definitely still afraid to do it, and I would love to think that they know that we're here, but unfortunately we know that a lot of people don't know what their reporting options are and who to turn to for help. Our program is new, and so that's one of our goals, is to start getting out there and making people aware that we're here and we're a resource and we are here to help and support you.
On the Army Guard side, there's units all over the state, and there's lots of them. On the air side, there's just two. But do all of those Army units, do they have someone there that's supposed to be the contact person for this type of harassment?
So we have really wonderful volunteer victim advocates down at the company levels all the way up. This is a collateral duty for them. It's something that they volunteered for. So they are out there. We're also hopefully following the independent review committee that came about after the murder of Specialist Vanessa Guillen. The Guard has gotten money from the federal government to stand up new positions. So right now I'm attached to Troop Command, and there's also a team that is attached to 1st Brigade. And the goal is to hire additional staff to be attached to other brigades. And so we'll have people stationed throughout the state in kind of a regional model so that there's other places that people can report to.
And make sure all those soldiers know that there's resources available.
Exactly.
Ladies, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today about the Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month, and my guests are Dawn Shoemaker, who is the Sexual Assault Response Coordinator for the 84th Troop Command Headquarters in Cambridge of the Army National Guard, and Nikki Kelly, who is the Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Victim Advocate from the 133rd Airlift Wing of the Air National Guard in St. Paul. And Nikki, I want to come to you. We asked Don about are there resources available in all of the Army units, and there's a lot of them around the state. You've just got two to worry about, the 148th Fire Wing and the 133rd Airlift Command.
And that's enough to worry about in my book.
Okay.
So we have teams at both locations. The 148th has a sexual assault response coordinator that people can meet with and gain support. And then I'm at the 133rd along with another sexual assault response coordinator.
So are you getting pretty good support from the commanders of each of those units and the command sergeant majors? And are they making an effort to make sure that all those airmen know that you're available to help?
They've been very supportive. I've really appreciated it. I love seeing them wear their teal ribbons and teal lanyards on Tuesdays in April to show their support. And I couldn't ask for a better team.
All right. So you've got a lot of work to do. Only two locations to worry about, where Don's got mostly the 84th Troop Command. But Don, if something's happened to one of our soldiers or airmen, they'd been sexually harassed to whatever degree, I'm still not clear on what's harassment and what isn't, or they've been assaulted, is there help available? Where do they go, and how do they deal with the mental trauma from that?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of places they can go to get help. Obviously, our office, but if you go to another helping agency and they are not the appropriate place, they're going to direct you to us. So that means the chaplain, behavior health, even the equal opportunity office. You can go to any helping agency and they will point you to the right place. If they come to us and we're not the appropriate place, we will point them to the right place. We will make sure they get connected where they need to get connected. That also includes to community organizations. If they don't want to receive support from a military organization, we will make sure they get connected there. Or if maybe they need long-term support to deal with the trauma of what happened, we will get them connected to those resources.
So are the troops reporting these issues, or are they still afraid to report it like they've kind of always been?
I think personally that is getting better. As our team gets fuller and we're able to make more contacts and get to know people and they start to hopefully form a little bit of a trust with us, I think we'll actually see our numbers of reports go up. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's happening at a higher rate. It means people are feeling safer coming forward to report.
So, Nikki, I'm trying to put myself in a position where I've been sexually harassed or abused.
Mm-hmm.
First off, I probably don't want to admit it. Secondly, I'm not sure I want to get anybody in trouble, because I should be tough enough to deal with this myself. But third, where's the safe place to go to report it? As I try to put my mind there, I think of the chaplain's office, because I always feel comfortable talking to a chaplain about almost anything.
Sure. So first of all, I'm going to talk you back a minute and say, I don't think anybody is tough enough to handle this, and nor should they be. This is something that is an abnormal behavior that should never be normalized. But if it does happen to you, we would hope that the chaplain is a safe place. You trust them. They've got great absolute privilege. The SAPR office or my office for the victim advocacy is another option. We have privileged communication, so we are definitely a place that could support as a person decides what they want to do in their response and their healing. You certainly could report to your command. You could report to law enforcement if you choose. That comes with some pros and cons that we would hope to talk an individual through before they make that choice.
So, Dawn, I'm hearing Nick, you say that don't internalize this and try to deal with it by yourself. Mm-hmm. Take it out, look at it, get some help.
That's correct. Of course, that's easier said than done. As Nikki had said earlier, that a lot of time the blame and the focus is on the victim and what they did wrong. And so that's still prevalent in society today, not just within the military. And so a lot of times people, you see that and you hear that over the years, and they internalize that along with their own guilt that they have going on. So opening up to somebody about something that is incredibly personal and you are so incredibly vulnerable takes a tremendous amount of courage.
Mm-hmm.
So, Nikki, I'm hearing you both say resources are available. We know how to help you. We know how to help you deal with this and put it behind you.
Yeah.
Is that true?
That's absolutely true. We're there for anybody who wants support, and that's exactly what you're going to get as much as you want, and it's going to be on your terms.
So even if somebody wants to just deal with it and maybe not get somebody else in trouble, there's a safe place to go talk about it, deal with it, find a way forward.
That's exactly right. We don't require people to report. The Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Office, so my office, Dawn's office, all of us are here just to support the victim and survivors in whatever they choose.
Nikki, I want to thank you for joining us today. And Dawn, 30 seconds, you get the last say.
So as we've been talking about, we are definitely here to support. There's multiple ways you can reach us, but for sake of keeping it simple on the radio, the Minnesota National Guard has an app that you can download that has not only our contact information, the chaplain contact information, behavioral health, and the Equal Opportunity Office. So all of the helping resources are available in one place in the Minnesota National Guard app.
Very good. And ladies, thanks for doing a good job on this topic for our entire Army and Air National Guard here in Minnesota, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
That was Nikki Kelly and Dawn Shoemaker from the Minnesota National Guard working on Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Joining me now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard is Doug Bly. Doug, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
As always, thanks for having us, Tom. We appreciate the opportunity.
Doug, you've been out here, Patriot Guard, longer than the 13 years that this show's been on the air, and unfortunately, we still lose veterans, and their families call, and when they call, you get a hold of your riders, and you never know how many are going to show up, but they do.
Boy, they do, Tom, and I'm just proud of all of them, you know, in all kinds of weather. You know, we're coming off of a rough winter, and it's kind of a nasty week, and we got a lot of missions, and people are still showing up every day. It doesn't matter the weather.
And you're still looking for more riders. How do they join if they want to?
Easiest and simple and fast way, go to our website, mnpatriotguard.org, and on the left-hand side it says Join Us, and you click that button, and then off of there you need to enter your email address and then the zip code of where you reside. And then within that sector, we've got 20 different geographic sectors in Minnesota. You get logged into one of those, and then once a week we're going to send you an email of everything going on across the state and locally, and then the ride captains will send out local information as well.
They don't need to be a veteran, and they don't need to ride a motorcycle. They just have to be good people, and they have a good heart and a flag.
Just a patriot and then a 3x5 flag on a pole that you can hold. And we always tell everybody the ones you buy at, you know, at the local hardware store that have the flagpole sections, make sure you tape them so they don't fall apart on you.
Well, I hope, Doug, there's plenty of patriots left in Minnesota that can join the riders, because it's an incredible thing to witness when you show up on the flag line at a funeral. It's overwhelming. It's wonderful.
Well, you and I have both been on the family side of it, Tom, and it's a very powerful thing to walk out and see those flags.
Doug, we just got a couple of minutes left, but one of your missions that we haven't talked about is a fallen officer mission. What is that?
So we've, in quite a while, Tom, that, you know, with the fallen officers in Minnesota, so we call it line of duty death. It could be for a firefighter. It could be for an EMS person and law enforcement officers. So when they're killed in the line of duty, then we are often asked to be part of the mission or the funeral for that day. And We're doing one this week for Deputy Owen out in Glenwood, Minnesota. He was taken from us last week, you know, in an on-duty call. And we work, it's called the Law Enforcement Memorial Association, Tom, and they do all the funeral planning for all law enforcement across Minnesota. So they're our primary contact. They get a hold of us, say the family would like us there. And what's really important for everyone to know, from law enforcement down to the riders, we stand behind them.
And here again, you don't go unless you're invited.
We don't go unless we're invited. And when we're there, I mean, we've all seen the TV reports of, you know, hundreds of law enforcement officers standing at attention. We stand behind them. That's their brother. That's their sister. We're just there to say we support you as citizens and as patriots, and we're there to help you as we can.
You know, that blue line out there is important, and we need more people to become police officers to help the rest of our citizens know when they need to behave, and I wish they'd behave a little better.
I do too, Tom. And, you know, I come from a family of firefighters, and it's the same thing, you know, when you lose a firefighter in a line of duty or practice. And it's the same thing to know that, you know, we're there behind them, and we're not about the politics of it. We're not about the social conversations that surround it. We're there for that officer. We're there for that family. We're there for that community, and to let them know that we stand there with a line of flags and willing to stand between them and any possible protesters. Same thing happens at them that happens at our active duty military funerals.
And whether it's our veterans or whether it's our police officers, it's all about honor, dignity, and respect.
It is, Tom. And even like, you know, this week we're doing a couple other things that we do as well. We're spending some time at the veterans home playing bingo, and we're there for all of our veterans.
Doug, I'd like to thank you for joining us again today, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Doug Bly from the Flagline of the Minnesota Patriot Guard. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Brad Lindsay and Judy Ojard from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Nikki Kelly and Don Shoemaker, my co-host Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Herkey, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we talk to the Minneapolis VA and check in with another Yellow Ribbon company. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.